Hachette Audio presents Seriously, I'm Kidding. Written and read by Ellen DeGeneres.
Dedication to all my fans. There's no joke here, just thank you for your support. Seriously, I'm not kidding. Acknowledgements. I had a hard time deciding how to list and acknowledge all the important people in my life. I was going to list people in alphabetical order, but that wouldn't be fair to Catherine Zeta-Jones. Then I thought maybe I should list everyone from shortest to tallest or thinnest to heaviest, but that didn't seem right either. So I decided to list everyone from smartest to dumbest. No, that's not true. This list is in no particular order, I stress that. Just because someone is first doesn't mean that they're the most important. It doesn't mean that they're not the most important either. I'm grateful for them all. So in no particular order, I'd like to thank my mother, my father, my brother, Craig Peralta, Eddie Yablons, Esther Newberg, Deb Futter, Eric Gold, Karin Weingarten, Harley Newman, Kevin Yorn, Hillary S.C. McLaughlin, David McGuire, Ed Glavin, Mary Conley, Andy Lastner, Lauren Pomerantz, Kevin Lehman, Jason Gellis, and to all my writers on my talk show. Even though I did mention earlier that this list is in no particular order, there is one person who is the most important person in my life, my wife, Portia. Thank you. A note from the author. Dearest listener, hello, how are you? That's great to hear. Listen, I want to thank you for buying this audiobook. We are about to begin a beautiful journey together, one that is unique and special. I know a lot of you might watch my talk show, but communicating through an audiobook is different than communicating through television. Like, on my talk show, I tell you what's going on in my life and what I'm thinking about each day. But in this audiobook, I'm going to tell you what's going on in my life and what I'm thinking about. You know what? I don't want to waste your time with silly comparisons. But I bet a lot of you are probably thinking, Ellen, or E, depending on how well we know one another, why are you writing another book after already proving yourself by penning two wildly, wildly successful tomes? Well, the truth is, since I wrote my last book, a lot has happened in my life. I got married, I got my own talk show, I started a record label, I became a cover girl, I was Dory, I won an Academy Award, I won the Boston Marathon, I started a compost heap, I was knighted by the Queen of England. I've experienced a whole lot the last few years, and I have a lot to share, so I hope that you'll take a moment to sit back, relax, and enjoy the words I've put together for you in this audiobook. I think you'll find I've left no stone unturned, no door unopened, no window unbroken, no rug unvacuumed, no ivories untickled. What I'm saying is, let us begin, shall we? Now, if you had the book in your hand, you'd see that a lot of what I said doesn't make sense, and you'd see why I said it. But you don't have the book, you're listening to me, so that's fine. Somebody will explain it to you. Or you'll buy the book as well. I don't know. It's up to you. Chapter 1. Writing this book. Over the last year or so since deciding to write this book, people have been asking me how I have the time and why I chose to write it. The truth is, last June, I was driving through a tunnel while I was on the phone with my agent and my cell service was spotty. I said, I just got a great IKEA table from my breakfast nook. My agent thought I said, I've got a great idea for my newest book. By the time we figured out our hilarious misunderstanding, I had signed a whole bunch of papers, who has time to read all those words, and I was under contract to write a book. Similarly, a few years ago, I told my agent, I think I got some fudge on my lapel, and he thought I said, I want to be a judge on American Idol. Since then, I got a new phone, and I found out my agent's name is Marvin, not Blarvin. But the truth is, I'm glad I decided to write this book. I love writing, and I do feel like I've learned a lot about life and love and other L words since I wrote my last book, and there are things I want to share with the world. As it turns out, writing a book is hard. It's not as hard as mining coal or teaching teenagers to drive, I know that, but it is hard. I didn't think it would be so hard because I go on television every day and I talk for an hour and I usually have plenty to say. Plus, I've already written other books, two as myself and dozens more under my pen name, Danielle Steele. When I first sat down to write, I stared at the blank page and I tried to think of some strategies for getting started. When I want a guest on my show to start talking and telling a good story, I ask him a question. So, I asked myself a question that I would ask a guest. When did you first fall in love with Tim McGraw? That didn't get me anywhere, and I quickly realized I shouldn't ask myself questions that are so specific to Faith Hill. So I asked myself a different question. What made you take on the lead role in Precious? That didn't work either. So then I began to think about you, the listeners. Who are you? What are you doing? What are you wearing? Not in a weird way. I thought it would help to put myself in your shoes for a moment. It always helps to think about other people instead of just ourselves. Like, if you want to know what I'm doing right now, I'm driving to work with my top down. The roof of my convertible is up. I'm wearing a beret. It helps me think, and it makes me feel French. That is also why I'm pretending to smoke a straw, and that is probably why a bus full of tourists is staring at me. So what would you like to hear about as my listener, I wondered. Perhaps you might like to hear about some of the highlights that have occurred throughout my life and career. But it's hard to know what highlights you would find exciting versus the highlights I think are exciting. For example, a few years ago, I called my credit card company and I got a late fee reversed that, quite honestly, I didn't think they'd reverse. That was a really big moment for me because you know how cranky some customer service representatives can be when they're having a bad day? But I don't know if that qualifies as the type of highlight you're looking to hear about. I let my mind wander through some of the biggest moments in my life, and then I realized what I needed to do. Since I don't know specific things about each and every one of you, except that a lot of you are probably brunettes, I decided to include a little something for everyone in this audiobook. You're going to hear some short stories for adults, and many things for all ages in between. You'll also hear self-help tips, some medical advice from someone who has no medical background nor the authority to dole out medical advice, nutrition facts, and you might even learn how to be happier in your everyday lives. I hope you do. Addendum. There are a few things I wanted to include in this audiobook, but decided instead to save for my memoir. The following is a list of things you will not hear about in this audiobook. Details of my long-term relationship with Javier Bardem. My years spent in juvie. My early days as a pioneer of disco. My involvement with the Milli Vanilli lip-syncing scandal of 1990. My recently discovered half-sister. The leaked sex tape. Chapter 2. Cover girl. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Beauty is only skin deep. Beauty is not in the face. Beauty is a light in the heart. Throughout my entire life, I believed in these sentiments. I believe that true beauty is not related to what color your hair is or what color your eyes are. True beauty is about who you are as a human being, your principles, your moral compass. And then in 2008, I was finally able to throw all that hogwash out the window because I was named the new face of CoverGirl Cosmetics. Take a bite out of that, world. Check out these cheekbones. I am a beauty queen. This is where flashbulbs go off and I turn my head from side to side, posing like a supermodel. It was apparently too expensive and not possible to put many light bulbs in every audiobook, so you're just going to have to imagine it. I'm sorry. The truth is, I still believe that above all things physical, it is more important to be beautiful on the inside, to have a big heart and an open mind and a spectacular spleen. Actually, most people's insides are disgusting. Even pretty people have unattractive insides. Have you ever seen those surgery shows on Discovery? Not pretty. To me, beauty is about being comfortable in your own skin. It's about knowing and accepting who you are. I'm happy being who I am. I'm confident. I live honestly and truthfully, and I think that that's why I was chosen as the first 50-year-old openly gay cover girl. It's just a bonus that I have devastatingly blue eyes. But we really are a society that focuses so much on physical appearance. I realized this recently when I accidentally looked into one of those mirrors that magnify your face to 500 times its actual size. They sell them at Bed Bath & Beyond in the things that make you feel bad about yourself aisle. They're right next to the bathroom scales, usually on a shelf you're too short to reach. I'm sure you've all looked into one of them at some point. On one side, it's a totally normal mirror, and then you turn it over to the other side and your face looks like the surface of the moon. Fortunately, I have one in our shower. I never look in it because it's usually blocked by the person who washes me. But for some reason, I looked in it one day and, oh lordy, that is a horrible invention. Who invented that thing and why haven't they been jailed? Those things need to come with a warning. Car mirrors have warnings that say objects are closer than they appear. Magnification mirrors should have warnings that say objects are not as attractive as they appear. They show you things that you didn't know were there, that no one could possibly see. I looked at my hairline and I found a family of doves living in it. It was shocking. The only people who need to see things that close up are surgeons who are performing delicate operations and jewelers. That's it. No one is going to see you the way you see yourself in those mirrors unless you're married to a surgeon or a jeweler and they come home from work still wearing that apparatus. Honey, I'm home. Oh my goodness, your pores are huge. I don't know why we ever need to look into those. They're not accurate. They point out every single one of our flaws. We don't need that. That's why we have mothers. The fact of the matter is that everyone has flaws. No one is perfect. except for Penelope Cruz. Our flaws are what make us human. If we can accept them as part of who we are, they really don't even have to be an issue. I feel the same way about age. I've never been someone to lie about my age. I don't understand it. Actually, I don't know how people can lie about their age anymore now that the internet exists. Not only can people easily find out what year I was born, they can find out what time, what hospital, how long my mother was in labor. I wouldn't be surprised if there was footage on YouTube of the doctor spanking me. The only reason there isn't is because YouTube didn't exist when I was born. Our age is something we have absolutely no control over. It's just a fact of who we are. I enjoy growing older and wiser and learning from my mistakes every single day. I'm happy, for example, that I no longer eat paste, like I did when I was 24. And I'm happy that in a few years, I'll be able to get half-price tickets to the movies and museums. Considering how often I go to the movies and museums, I could save upward of $30 a year. When we were kids, all we wanted to do was be older. When we were 7 and a half, and someone only said we were 7, we were furious. We probably even cried about it. Can you imagine doing that now as an adult? This is Marcia. She's 42. 42 and a half. You always forget the half. I'm practically 42 and three quarters. I don't know at what age people stopped wanting to be older. People seem to enjoy their 20s and 30s. Must be around 40 when you're over the hill. I don't even know what that means and why it's a bad thing. When I go hiking and I get over the hill, that means I'm past the hard part and there's a snack in my future. That's a good thing as far as I'm concerned. People seem to be shy about their age through their 50s and 60s, but then once they hit 70 or 80, they start telling people again because it's such a huge victory to have made it that far. No one gets to 100 and tells people they're only 95. So I don't know why anyone has to lie about those middle years. We should celebrate every year that we made it through and every year that we're happier and healthier. Because honestly, that's the best case scenario. And the bottom line is we are who we are. We look a certain way, we talk a certain way, we walk a certain way. I strut because I'm a supermodel, and sometimes I gallop for fun. When we learn to accept that, other people learn to accept us. So be who you really are. Embrace who you are. Literally, hug yourself. Accept who you are, unless you're a serial killer. I know it seems easy and breezy for me to say, but trust me, it's okay to be you. If you had called me 15 years ago and told me I was going to end up being a cover girl, I would have said, no way, and how'd you get this number? But look at me now. I'm totally myself, and I'm an internationally known, widely sought-after supermodel. I even went to Paris once. Chapter 3. How to be a supermodel. Since I'm a cover girl, I thought if any of you are interested in learning a bit about modeling, I could offer you some tips. I've sashayed down plenty of catwalks in my day. Well, one. But I know what it takes to make an impression. So here are some suggestions, as long as you're willing to be fierce. Number 1. The look. Always look like you're angry at the universe for making you too pretty. Number 2. The walk. Trot. Aggressively, like you're a horse that's trying to avoid puddles. Number 3. The squint. Squint your eyes like someone's bouncing sunlight off their watch directly into your eyes. Number 4. The pout. Get those lips out there. Purse your lips like you're trying to sip out of a straw that someone keeps moving away from you. Number 5. The pose. Be mysterious. Always pose with one hand in your pocket, as if to say, I'm so mysterious. This hand in my pocket could be a hook hand. You don't know. Number 6. The breeze. Carry a giant oscillating fan with you at all times. No exceptions. Now put it all together. Trot, squint, get the straw. Who's a pretty girl? You are. Keep trotting. Chapter 4. Stuff. I don't like clutter. I firmly believe that there is a place for everything and everything should be in its place. And I know there's a name for people like me. Neat. It is astounding to me how much stuff we all have. Our closets are full of stuff. Our drawers are full of stuff. Our stuff is piled on top of other stuff. And the older we get, the more stuff that we have because over the years we buy more and more stuff and we never want to let go of anything. Nowadays, people are a little bit more aware of how much stuff they have because there's a bit of a social stigma if you have too much stuff. There's even a name for people who have the most stuff. They're called hoarders. Back in the day, they were just called grandmothers. If you want to clean out your house and get rid of stuff, you can always do a good spring cleaning every year. Or you can do what I do, move. I move a lot. I've moved about 10 times over the past 15 years. I don't move for the sole purpose of getting rid of stuff. I'm not crazy. I also move so that I never have to wash any windows. Is that a smudge? Time to pack it up. Let's go. When you're packing up a house, you're forced to decide what you really need versus what you can get rid of. You might have been holding on to cases and cases of empty glass jars, but once you have to pack them up and move them, you realize maybe you're not going to harvest your own honey. Mama is similar to me in that she also likes to move a lot. Mama has moved 32 times since 1952. It's so funny because I remember sometimes I would come home from school and there would be a note on the door that said, "I moved, try to find me." And I would spend hours and hours trying to find the new house. Sometimes I'd find it by nightfall, sometimes I wouldn't. Actually, this is really funny. One time she accidentally forgot to leave a note, and I had no idea that she even moved. I was living in a house with a beautiful Mexican family for about 3 months before I realized they weren't my cousins visiting from out of town. They were so nice. They called me Kianess, Kianess, which I thought was such a beautiful name. Anyway, my mama might be similar to me as far as moving around goes, but as far as clutter is concerned, she's a little different. When she moved into the house she lives in now, I think she's going to stay there for a while. They say the 32nd time is the charm. She made it a point to tell me how excited she was because she's going to downsize. She was getting rid of all the stuff she didn't need anymore and starting fresh in her new house. I was so proud of her. I went over to help her settle in, and I assumed when I got there, I wouldn't have to unpack much more than a pillow and a spoon. Not so. Let me share with you some of the items that Betty, I am downsizing DeGeneres, asked the movers to wrap up, place in a box, seal up in a box, put in a van, move into a whole new house so that I could cut open the box, take out the items, and unwrap them. A three-hole punch, a single-hole punch, a VHS tape of Abs of Steel, an unopened VHS tape of hip-hop abs, a harmonica, another harmonica, a third harmonica, a rusty sifter, a colander from 1953, and biscuit cutters. Many of those items have moved 32 times, and I should point out a few things. First of all, Mama moved into a house in 2010, not 1987, as the VHS tapes would have you believe. Second of all, Mama is not in a blues band. She does not play the harmonica, and even if she did, the ones I found in the box looked like they had been dug up next to some train tracks. If Mama put her mouth anywhere near them, I would immediately take her in for a tetanus shot. Thirdly, Mama does not cook or bake or prepare food in any way. I don't know what sort of imaginary biscuits she thinks she's going to cut. I could not believe how much stuff my mama still had, but it's because we all justify holding on to things. We do this especially with clothing. We all have so many things in our closets that we never, ever wear, but we convince ourselves just to keep it just in case we ever need to paint. We don't paint, we won't paint, but we have dozens of old Wham! T-shirts just in case. A lot of people hold on to clothing just for the sentimental value. They say, "I can't get rid of this jacket. I love it. I wore it on my first cruise." Of course you love it. You bought it. But it doesn't fit you anymore, and the shoulder pads make you look like a 1980s football player who loved the color salmon. I'm guilty of it, too. I still have the shirt I wore my first time on Johnny Carson, only now I use it as a tablecloth at dinner parties. It was very, very blousy. We're always worried that we're going to get rid of something, and then it's going to come back in fashion. But even if it does, I assure you that the paisley jumpsuit you've been holding on to won't. They always make a tiny tweak so that it's a little bit different, so we have to buy the updated version. 1 year, big collars are in, and the next year they make collars an eighth of an inch shorter. So we go out and buy the collar that's an eighth of an inch shorter because, heaven forbid, someone sees us walking around town with last year's collar. As if strangers on the street are going to come up to us and measure our collars. Oh, no, she's wearing last year's collar, everyone. She's wearing last year's collar! It's not just clothing we hold on to, it's old electronics, it's old furniture, and I'll tell you one thing I recently discovered in my own home, lotion. Portia hoards lotion. I don't know how it took me so long to notice, but she has bottles and bottles of lotion. There are some lined up on the counter, there are some in baskets under the sink, she has cheap ones from drugstores and real fancy ones from the Sheraton and the Holiday Inn. She has every kind of lotion that there is, and there's a lot. There's lotion for your face, lotion for your hands, lotion for your feet, lotion for your body. Why? What would happen if you had hand lotion on your feet? Would your feet get confused and start clapping? Each kind says it has something special in it for your skin. Aloe, shea butter, coconut, cocoa butter, vanilla, lemon extract. That's not lotion. That's one ingredient short of a bundt cake. Don't get me wrong. I like lotion. I use a moisturizer on my face. I have to. It's my moneymaker. And I like to use hand lotion. I shake a lot of hands, and I want people to experience my suppleness. But hand lotion is tricky. You have to know exactly how much to put on. You don't want to overdo it. Portia once put too much on and got stuck in the bathroom for an hour trying to turn the doorknob. And then I had to remind her that we have a door that slides. My point is everyone who has buckets and buckets of lotion should get rid of all the lotion they don't use anymore, and by everyone, I do mean Portia. Or at least she should think about combining all the half bottles into one giant bottle so we could get rid of some of the stuff and she could smell like a baby eating a cucumber in an orange grove. I hope she listens to this. I really do think it's important to let go of things and give things away, to declutter and get out from under that pile of papers and old cereal boxes and harmonicas. It's cathartic. It's freeing. Plus, you could get some good money for some stuff on eBay. A vintage colander goes for just under $350? Mama's gonna be rich! Chapter 5. Thunderclap. A short, short story. It was a dark and stormy night. The streets were empty. They seemed sad, almost, and hollow. The wind was howling, and the rain was pouring down upon the rooftop so loud that Papa could barely hear the sound of his tea kettle. Eventually, the storm passed and normal activity resumed. Chapter 6. Personally speaking, I spend a lot of time exploring my body. Hang on, that doesn't sound right. What I mean to say is, I like to constantly be in touch with my own body. Okay, that's not right either. My body is a wonderland. I don't even know why I just said that. What I'm trying to say is that as I've gotten older, I've started to pay closer attention to my body and to my physical well-being. I think we all have to do that as we get older. We have to check ourselves out, literally, to make sure nothing has appeared or disappeared or grown or shrunk or tightened or loosened or sagged or ulcered or bulged or inflamed. I really hope you're not eating. Once we hit 40 and 50 years old, our bodies go through a lot of changes. Even if we're in really good shape, things start to slow down. Our metabolism slows down, our reflexes slow down, sometimes we become slightly more forgetful. I don't want to alarm anyone who isn't there yet, but you should know that a day will come when you leave your keys in the freezer and you try to start your car with a bagel. You should also know that studies have shown that after age 50, there is a 97% chance you will pull your groin while putting on a bathing suit. It's a proven fact. You can do the research on your own time. I actually pulled my groin once a few years ago. I don't even know how I did it. All I know is when it happened, I was right in the middle of auditioning for the Rockettes and it ruined everything. The problem with pulling your groin, besides pulling your groin, is that there isn't really a delicate way to treat it. Whenever I pull a muscle in my back, I get a massage to make it feel better. When you pull a muscle in your groinal region, it's much trickier. You can't ask a stranger to massage it. That's why I had to ask my gardener to do it. And I'll be honest, at first it was awkward, but then it was beautiful. We have to take care of ourselves as we age, and that includes getting procedures done that are invasive, uncomfortable, and at times what many would refer to as third date territory. One of those procedures is a colonoscopy. I had my first routine colonoscopy after I turned 50. I'm sure you all know what it entails, but if you don't, I'll explain it as best I can. Basically, a colonoscopy is a procedure where a camera starts downtown and travels uptown on the C train. In Los Angeles, they do it a little bit differently. They attach cameras to teeny, tiny paparazzi who head up there and take thousands of pictures of your colon that later end up on TMZ. I didn't know exactly what to expect when I went in for my colonoscopy. First of all, because of my work schedule, I had to get mine done on a Saturday. Luckily, there's a little kiosk in the mall that does colonoscopies and ear piercing on the weekends. The first thing I had to do when I got there was put on a gown. I think it was a Zac Posen. I don't normally wear gowns, but this was a beautiful one, open in the back and slightly off the shoulder. They made me take everything off except for my socks. I guess they let you keep those on so you don't feel totally naked. As it turns out, even with socks on, you still feel totally and completely naked. I don't know what they're thinking. Socks or no socks, all the important parts are still out and about. After I was in my gown and socks, the doctor came in and greeted me. She was also wearing a gown, so I tried to make a joke like, "Hey, it's embarrassing, we're wearing the same gown." And she laughed, but she was holding a needle at the time, so it suddenly felt like a scene from Misery. Right away, she started to give me sleepy time drugs. That's the medical term. And all I remember after the sleepy time drugs is saying, "I gotta get..." And that's it. I was out for the rest of the procedure. When you wake up, it's a little disorienting. You're not sure where you are. Katie Couric is there with a film crew. It's jarring, but it's necessary, and I'm glad I did it. Another routine procedure that every woman needs to get is a mammogram. Now, the word mammogram makes it sound like it's gonna be a fun experience. You think a cute little grandma is gonna show up at your door to sing you a happy birthday song or something. Unfortunately, that is not the case. A mammogram is less like a fun song and more like an industrial-strength panini press. The difference between a colonoscopy and a mammogram, well, there are a few differences, obviously. One takes place above the equator and one takes place below it. But the other difference is that with the mammogram, you are fully aware of what is going on. You don't need any drugs to knock you out because it's not a painful procedure. It's just uncomfortable and awkward, especially given the fact that you are standing face to face with a technician working the machine. At least it's awkward for me anyway because inevitably I have to make small talk. Yep, I do dance a lot. No, not all the time. Well, I'm a big fan of your mom, so thank you. That is nice to hear. I cannot believe they haven't come up with a better screening process than a mammogram. If a man had to put his special parts inside a clamp to test him for anything, I think they would come up with a new plan before the doctor finished saying, "Put that thing there so I can crush it." I'm getting away from my point. My point is, these tests are very important, and I don't mind telling you all about my groin, my colon, and my breasts if it means helping you take care of yourself. I just thought of something else I could share with you. Would you like to hear about one of my moles? No? All right, moving on. Chapter 7. The Secret of Life. Kale. Chapter 8. The Secret of Life, Part 2. Okay, there might be more to the secret of life than kale, although it really is an incredible leaf. One serving of kale has 88% of your daily value of vitamin C. That's the nutritional element of this book I was referring to earlier. People are constantly searching for the secret of life. In terms of what people spend their time searching for, it goes sunglasses, the secret of life, the fountain of youth, car in the mall parking lot, cell phone, keys, contact lenses, love. We all spend time searching for the secret of life because we think it will bring us closer to the one thing we all want. The one thing that no matter what we do in our lives or where we go or who we marry, we all aspire to have. It's the most important thing in the world. Money. No, I'm sorry. Not money. Happiness. That's what I meant. Happiness. And once you find happiness, you've pretty much uncovered the secret. Some people believe that to find happiness, you should live each day of your life as if it's your last, because that way you'll appreciate every single moment you have. Other people believe that you should live each day as if it's your first, because then every day can be the beginning of a new journey. Those are conflicting ideas, and I know it can be confusing. Do you live each day as if it's your first or your last? Either way, you should probably have a diaper on. If you lived each day like it was your first, you would constantly be discovering the world like babies do. Babies have an incredible sense of wonder. They're in awe of everything around them, from mirrors to squeaky toys to their own hands. The simplest things are mesmerizing to them. Adults are sometimes mesmerized by their own hands, but it's usually under very different circumstances, when they're attending music festivals in the desert. That's why it's so refreshing for me to be around my 2-year-old niece. Everything excites her right now because she's experiencing so many things for the very first time. She's learning how to walk and talk. Recently, we let her drive on the freeway for the first time. She went wild for it. For some reason, as we get older, we lose that sense of wonder. We get jaded. I don't know when it happens exactly, but I think it's sometime between finding out the tooth fairy doesn't exist and realizing the real housewives are neither real nor housewives. It could also be that we're desensitized. Between YouTube and reality television and Cinemax After Dark, we've pretty much seen it all. There are very few things that wow us anymore. A child will see something as simple as a garage door open, and it's literally all they will talk about for weeks. As an adult, we'll see a human person ride a bike, catapult over 18 cars that are on fire, land on a skateboard, slide down a ramp, and end up in the backseat of a taxi and be like, yeah, that was all right, but did you see the guy who pogo-sticked over 38 grandmothers? I'm not saying we need to live like babies in every way. I mean, sure, it would be great to get carried around in a papoose. Who wouldn't want that? But I'm glad I'm potty trained and I'm not always trying to eat my feet like babies do. I just wish we could hold on to that sense of wonder because sometimes we don't notice some of the most incredible things in the world. We walk by beautiful flowers and trees every day without looking at them. We rush through our day without even saying hi to most of the people we see. We take a lot for granted, and I think that's why some people say it's better to live each day as our last. That way we might start appreciating more things around us. Either that or we would immediately quit our jobs and go live in a yurt. If we lived each day as our last, I bet we'd be a lot more honest with people because we wouldn't have to care what people think anymore. We would meet a friend for lunch and blurt out, "Hey, that's an ugly hat." Or tell a police officer, "If you thought that was speeding, sir, you should have seen what I was doing earlier. I think it was the fastest I've ever driven." Or if you break up with someone, you'd finally tell them, "I just want you to know, it's not me, it's you." There would be nothing to lose, and because of that, you would probably take a lot more chances in life. I think it's important to take risks. That doesn't mean you have to do some crazy thing like jump out of a plane or scale an ice-covered mountain using only your fingers or a short piece of rope and a nail file. I don't know what makes people see sharp cliffs and say, "I'd like to dangle from that." Obviously, if you're into that sort of thing, go for it. But if you're not, you can start small. Eat an apple without washing it first. Answer your phone even though the number calling is unknown. Wait only 27 minutes to swim after you eat. Do whatever you think is risky. When you take risks, you learn that there will be times when you succeed and there will be times when you fail. And both are equally important. It's hard to understand failure when you're going through it. But in the grand scheme of things, it's good to fall down. Not because you're drunk and not near stairs. But it's failure that gives you the proper perspective on success. When I came out of the closet on my sitcom, I knew it was a risk, but I took the risk, and look what happened. It got canceled. Not the point. The point is, I got back on my horse. When I found out my sitcom was canceled, I happened to be riding one of those toy horses outside the supermarket, and I pushed forward. I said, "You'll show 'em, Ellen." And I did another sitcom. Guess what happened? That got canceled, too. Not the point either. The real point is that I kept going, and now I appreciate my success more than I could have ever imagined. I look back on the days of doing stand-up in a basement for three friends. Well, one friend and two mice. Okay, three mice. And I'm so proud of where I am today. So let that be a lesson. Kids who get an F in math, Ellen says you're doing the right thing. You're welcome, parents. When you really think about it, it doesn't matter if you choose to live each day as your first or your last. You could live each day as your second or third, so all the gunk you're born with is out of your eyes. Or you could live each day as your 912th or 15,337th. I actually remember that day in my life so clearly. I was in my 40s and I needed a break from everything in my life, so I decided to get away. I went to Jamaica and I spent some time thinking about my life and what I wanted, and I ended up learning how to get my groove back. You know what? I'm sorry. I'm thinking of how Stella got her groove back. But what's important is that you enjoy and appreciate every day. And that's something you can accomplish by just living in the moment. Don't look behind you. Unless someone yells, "Look out behind you." And then you should definitely look out behind you, you know, because there's a good chance a frisbee is being thrown at your head, or if you're in a movie, an attractive teenage vampire is about to attack you. Otherwise, don't look back and don't spend too much time worrying about the future. Just stay in the present. There are a few ways to do that. Stop and smell the roses. Wake up and smell the coffee. Enjoy the sweet smell of success. I guess just keep taking whiffs of stuff, because it seems like the more we smell, the happier we're going to be. You know what I mean? Chapter 9. Journal Entries. I usually like to keep my private matters private, but I thought I could make an exception this one time to share some of the journal entries I've written since 2003, right around the time my last book came out. Please enjoy a little insight into my personal musings over the last several years. May 30th, 2003. Dear Journal, remember that movie called Finding Nemo that I told you I worked on years and years ago? Well, it came out today, and guess what? It set the record for best opening day ever of an animated movie. I am so proud to have been a part of it. I wouldn't be surprised if Pixar called me today to say they want to make a sequel. This is great. This is really, really great. What a wonderful, wonderful, perfect situation this is, Journal. August 1st, 2003. Journal. Finding Nemo is now the highest-grossing animated movie of all time. Can you believe it? Hang on, my phone's ringing. It's probably Pixar telling me that they want to make a sequel. Bye, Journal. Talk to you again when I'm rich. August 2nd, 2003. Journal. That phone call wasn't about Finding Nemo 2, but I'm sure they're going to call any minute. The call was about my new talk show. That's another thing I'm so excited about. It starts in about a month. I have to start thinking about what I want to wear on my first show and how I'm going to get my hair did. Just thinking about it makes me want to dance up and down the aisles for some reason. Anyway, I'll let you know when Pixar comes a-knockin'. Should be any second now. September 8th, 2003. Dear Journal. Big day. My talk show premiered on TV. Wow, I think this is going to be really fun. People seem to like it, and I'm really proud of it. I don't know what my schedule is going to be like over the next few months and years, but don't worry, I'm still going to try and write in here every single day. February 25th, 2007. Journal. I just finished hosting the Oscars. I'm currently experiencing an indescribable feeling. It's joy mixed with relief mixed with the smell of Clint Eastwood's aftershave. I can't believe I just hosted the Academy Awards. I'm headed to the after party now. I'm sure it'll be a quiet, tame night. Just kidding. It's about to get crazy up in here. I have a feeling my three-piece suit will be down to one piece in about an hour. Journal, if you understand what I'm saying. August 16th, 2008. Dear Journal, today was the happiest day of my life. I got married. I am so happy. You can tell how happy I am based on how many O's I used. I've never used that many O's. Portia and I got married and exchanged vows in front of a small group of our friends and family. It was a perfect day. May 16, 2009. Journal. Today I gave the commencement speech at Tulane University in my hometown in New Orleans. I had a great time, and I think I gave those kids a lot of great advice. I can't believe they let me do that, even though I didn't go to no college. I meant to, but I totally forgot. I think I made my mama very proud today by making one of her dreams for me come true. I finally wore a gown. January 26, 2010. Dear Journal, today's my birthday. I had a great day today, and I'm so excited for this year. I have so much to look forward to. American Idol is starting up soon. I can't wait. I think I'm going to want to do it forever. March 15, 2010. Journal. I'm on a sugar cleanse. I haven't had any sugar in over 3 weeks. I think I'm experiencing withdrawal. Today I screamed at a plant. I don't know why I decided to do this. It's crazy. There's sugar in everything. Did you know that? Everything. Even cupcakes. All right, I have to go, Journal. You're being a jerk. May 26, 2010. Journal. Big news, I'm starting a record label. I love music and I love discovering new artists. I won't be any different, though, now that I'm going to be a mogul. I'll still be the same old Ellen. Oh, I gotta bounce. My pimp mobile is outside. Look at those rims. Holla! July 27th, 2010. Journal. What an exciting day. Remember I told you about all that gold I mailed in for cash? Guess what? The money arrived today. I got $1.24. August 16th, 2010. Dear Journal, today Portia and I celebrated our 2-year wedding anniversary. When I got home from work, Portia... You know what? I'm not going to read the rest of that one. September 8th, 2010. Journal. I made my Broadway debut tonight in the Big Apple. I starred in a show called Promises, Promises alongside my supporting cast Kristen Chenoweth and Sean Hayes. It was so much fun, but guess what, Journal? I think I caught the theater bug. Literally. There was a roach in my dressing room the size of my fist. New York City is filthy. January 1st, 2011. Happy 2011, Journal. Had a great New Year's Eve, set a new record, and managed to stay up until 9:30. It was crazy, Journal. January 18th, 2011. Hey, Journal. I watched The Biggest Loser tonight. That show is so good, I can't stop crying. I don't know how they do it. I'm crying so much I have mascara running down my face, and I'm not even wearing mascara. The show is powerful. May 25th, 2011. Dear Journal, today was the very last episode ever of The Oprah Winfrey Show. Wow, I can't believe it. I don't know how her show got canceled. So many people loved it. But you know what this means? Now that Larry King is retired, Oprah's moving on, Regis quit, all of television will be mine. Ha ha ha! June 24th, 2011. Journal. I'm about to turn my new book into the publisher. Writing a book is hard. I thought it was mostly going to be journal entries like this, but it turns out they need more to fill a book. I wish it could be all journal entries. Anyway, I'm going to send the book in and then probably head to the movies. You know what comes out today, Journal? Cars 2. Isn't that great? A sequel to a hit animated movie. I'm so happy for them. Chapter 10. Important words. Now, this is a very difficult chapter for me to write. This chapter, chapter 10, is my favorite chapter in one of my favorite books, so I feel an enormous amount of pressure to make it spectacular. Ugh. I mean, there are other books that I've read where chapter 10 was not that great at all, but I prefer not to tell you which book I'm referring. Maybe the author of that book failed to read the chapter in the book I aforementioned. I don't know if aforementioned is a word or if it's correctly used here, but whenever I feel stress or pressure of any kind, I try to use big, important words. It just makes me feel better and more powerful. Like if I get pulled over for speeding, I usually say something like Mr. or Mrs. or Miss, depending on the situation, of course. Gentleman enforcer of the legal government principles, I am en route to my appendectomy. And then they usually say something like license and registration, and then I say cacophony, and then they usually write me a ticket. I don't know why bigger words seem like they're more important. Really, all words are important, even small words like the or it or a or for that matter. I mean, you can't form a sentence without those words. Let me try to make a sentence without using any of the words just to make a point. See, I can't. Well, I guess technically I can't is a sentence that doesn't use the word the or it or a or. But you understand what I'm trying to say, right? All those small words are just as important as big words. I say it all the time about words and only words. It's not the size that counts. It's the way you use them in sentences, paragraphs, and slam poetry. Some authors try to be all show-offy with fancy sentences, and I could do that if I really wanted to. It's not like I don't know all those rarely used, big, fancy, ostentatious words, too. Of course I do. And if that's what it takes for a book to win a Pulitzer or some grand literary prize, I guess I could throw a sentence or two in. Why not? I'll do it right now. One day, my domesticated feline, Charlie, was unequivocally euphoric. I deducted this based on my astute observation of her level of loquaciousness while she hurriedly pursued her high-pitched, squeakable toy rodent of the species Mouseus. See? Easy. Here's another example. Women are supposed to be very calm, generally, but women feel just as men feel. They need exercise for their facilities and a field for their efforts as much as their brothers do. They suffer from too rigid a restraint, too absolute a stagnation, precisely as men would suffer, and it is narrow-minded in their more privileged fellow creatures to say that they ought to confine themselves to making pudding and knitting stockings, to playing on the piano and embroidering bags. It is thoughtless to condemn them or laugh at them if they seek to do more or learn more than custom has pronounced necessary for their sex. Okay, that was from Jane Eyre, and I can't keep this charade up for a whole chapter. That Jane Eyre really is good, though, isn't it? Chapter 11. Stretching. There's one thing that should be essential to everyone's daily routine. I'm sorry, two things: watching my talk show and stretching. Feel free to stretch while you watch my talk show, if you think it's possible to take your eyes off me for even a second. Stretching can apply to so many different areas of our lives. Not only should we literally stretch our bodies so that things are less likely to snap off, we should also stretch our minds. I think it's so important to keep our minds active and to constantly be learning new things. We shouldn't just stop at high school. I mean, technically I did, but you understand what I'm saying. There are a lot of different ways to keep our minds active. A lot of people do crossword puzzles. Those are great for stimulating your brain. And other people love doing those really complicated and confusing puzzles where you have to place all the numbers and then they have to add up. What's that called? Oh yeah, math. I like to stretch my mind by reading and writing and watching educational TV shows like The Bachelor to learn the complex mating rituals of heterosexuals. Portia recently decided to learn something new. She taught herself how to cook. She didn't take any lessons or classes or anything. She just figured it out on her own. I know what you're thinking. Uh-oh. But she's really good at it. Cooking isn't an easy skill to learn. It can be very dangerous. There's fire, there's steam, there are sharp, sharp knives. Portia's down to three fingers, but she never gave up, and that's why I love her. I think it's great that she started to cook, mostly because I can't. And it's nice to have one person in the relationship who cooks, because that way we can share responsibilities in the kitchen, like a lot of couples do. Portia cooks and I clean. Just kidding. I don't clean. Gross. But I do think it's great that she was so excited to learn something new. I recommend it to everybody. Learn a new instrument, learn to paint, learn puppetry, or you can just learn new facts. I can teach you a few things right now that you might not know. First of all, did you know that a snail can sleep for 3 years? That's why they move so slowly when they're awake, they're groggy. Did you know that raccoons have such nimble fingers that they can not only open garbage can lids and turn doorknobs, they can untie shoelaces? Now you know why they're so good at putting on eyeliner. Doesn't it feel nice to stretch your mind a little bit? Now that you've done that, it's time to move on to your body. Yoga is a great way to stretch your body. I try to do it every morning because it's a great way to start the day. It gives me a lot of energy, and now that I've been doing it for a while, I'm pretty good at it. My downward dog is so excellent, I can't show it on daytime television. There are all different kinds of yoga. There's power yoga, there's Bikram yoga, which makes you sweat a lot because it's done in very hot rooms. You can always tell who does Bikram yoga because they're stinky. But all yoga is based on hatha yoga, which is what I do, and hatha yoga is based on watching animals stretch in nature. I know what you're thinking. Ellen, I've seen my dog stretch out in certain ways to clean himself, and I don't want to do that. That's not the part yoga focuses on. The word yoga literally means uniting, because when you're doing it, you're uniting your mind and your body. You can tell this almost immediately because your mind will be thinking, "Ouch, that hurts," and your body will say, "I know." And your mind will think, "You have to get out of this position." And your body will say, "I agree with you, but I can't right now. I think I'm stuck." Another thing that is great for stretching out your mind and body is meditation. It helps improve your memory and it increases blood flow. It forces you to calm down and relax. There are a lot of different ways to meditate. You can do it by yourself or you can do it with other people. I'm still talking about meditation. You can do it anywhere. And all you have to do is close your eyes, so you probably shouldn't do it while you're driving or operating heavy machinery, but otherwise you're good to go. Meditation requires a lot of focus, and sometimes it's easy to get distracted. I've tried taking classes because I think it's easier to meditate with other people. Being surrounded by good energy helps me focus and find positivity and happiness. But even then, I always want to open my eyes, especially because there's incense burning and I always think the room is on fire. So instead of focusing on my inner joy, I focus on trying to remember where the closest exits are. At some point, I do tend to open my eyes for a second just to see if the room's on fire. Of course it isn't, but when my eyes are open, I see two other people with their eyes open and I wonder how long they've had them open. Then I notice the giant gong and I think, I wonder what happened to the gong show. Chuck Barris hosted that show. What about that other Chuck? Not Chuck Berry, Chuck Woolery. He hosted the Love Connection. He did that 2 and 2. I wonder who came up with that. Did he? Was it a producer? Did he not know that there was a number called 4? That makes me start thinking about the number 4. It's interesting that 4 is spelled F-O-U-R, but 40 is spelled F-O-R-T-Y. Then, of course, I immediately think about building a couch fort. Maybe I should build a couch fort on the set of my show and have my guests talk to me inside the fort. That'd be fun and entertaining, and we should probably do it in our pajamas. Once I realize that my mind has started to wander, I stop and I try to do what I'm supposed to do when that happens, focus on my third eye. Guess what? That makes me think about how great it would be to have a third eye. Would I want it on my forehead or on the back of my head? Maybe on the top of my head. No, because of rain. What if my lips were my eyes? Then I'd get a lot more crumbs in my eyes, but I'd be able to get a really good look at what I'm eating. Just as I'm designing a pair of sunglasses for my head and my lip eyes, the teacher hits the gong and I jump, and I almost yell, "Oh my God!" But because I'm smart, I yell, "Oh!" And I'm the only one chanting, but the class just thinks I'm really into meditation. The om actually calms me down, so I leave feeling great. I'm peaceful, relaxed, and I'm in a great mood. And now you see why it's so great to meditate. Not to mention how much I think my memory has improved. It used to be terrible. I was never very good at remembering people, even people I'd met before and even people who had been a guest on my show. I could spend an entire night at a fancy Hollywood party talking to someone, and when Portia asked whom I was chatting with, I would have to shrug and say it was either Marcia Cross or Zac Efron, I don't know. Now my memory is much, much better, and I'll tell you more about that in a second. My phone's ringing. I'll be right back. Chapter 12. Meditation. Ah, doesn't that feel better? Chapter 13, Guided Meditation. Let's begin by getting in a comfortable position. Sit or lie down and close your eyes. Or if you're driving, keep your eyes open and fast forward through this chapter. Now breathe in through your nose. Doesn't that smell nice? Hopefully. Now exhale through your mouth. If you're on a crowded bus, apologize to the person whose face you just blew in. Quietly say, "I'm sorry I just blew in your face." And relax. Feel your breath moving through your body. We're inhaling energy and we're exhaling stress. Breathe in positivity and light. Breathe out negative thoughts like traffic or flight delays or bad service at a restaurant or frustration with your boss or a fight with your spouse or girlfriend or boyfriend or money woes or getting your car towed or losing at Scrabble or getting left at the altar or finding out about a weed allergy or having one of your favorite socks stolen out of the dryer or depression. Don't dwell on any of those thoughts that I mentioned. Say goodbye to negative thoughts. We'll see you another time. Now relax your mind. You're in a meadow, a beautiful meadow with bright green blades of grass and no ticks. It's peaceful and quiet. Listen to the wind blow across the meadow. Do you hear it? That was an airplane. Listen closer. Listen to the leaves rustle and the snakes slither. No, not snakes. There are no snakes in this meadow. Should not have said snakes. Slow down your mind. Slower. Think about how slow you have to drive when there's someone on a bicycle in front of you in the middle of your lane. Are you annoyed? Don't be. Today's not annoying. Today is peaceful. Start to float above the meadow. Oh, look at that. You're floating. Are you scared of heights? Don't think about that. Picture your wallet falling out of your pocket. You don't care. Let the wallet go. A stranger picked it up, took the money out, and left the wallet behind, let it go. You didn't need that money. You're floating peacefully above the meadow. Turns out there was a tick, but it didn't bite you. You're breathing out relief. The tick did not bite you. Feel the energy around you. Now you're floating above water. There's a creek in the meadow, or it might be a brook. You don't know the difference. Maybe there isn't one. You don't care. Just picture the creek brook, the winding path piercing the meadow, the sun bouncing off the rocks. Don't think about how dangerous it would be to slip on them. As you approach the water, you see a bridge. It's a bridge that leads to happiness. To the left of the bridge is a cape. Not a cape like a piece of land, an actual cape like a superhero would have. Put on the cape. Now you have magical powers. You can do anything you want in this cape except fly. As you get closer, you realize the whole bridge is made out of dark chocolate. It's unsafe to walk on, but it is so delicious. Carefully cross the bridge to happiness. Don't let anyone take your cape. It's yours. People will try to take your cape out of jealousy, but don't let them. On the other side of the bridge, they're showing classic reruns of The Love Boat. Happiness is yours once you cross the dark chocolate bridge in your cape. Be careful and good luck. Chapter 14. American Idol, or if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. I've been a genuine fan of American Idol since it began. I love music, I love supporting new talent, and I love medleys about Ford, so it's always been one of my favorite shows. It turns out, however, I enjoy it a whole lot more when I get to watch it from the comfort of my very own living room. Everyone asks me about my time as a judge on Idol. People want to know what it's really like to be there, what Ryan is like, what Simon is like. I'll say this about them. Ryan is truly a workaholic. He never stops. You don't see this watching from home, but during commercial breaks, he goes around the audience selling Mary Kay cosmetics. And as for Simon, you can't always believe what you see. I know he comes across a certain way on TV, but in real life, and I don't mean to shock you, he's actually completely hairless. When I first agreed to do the show, I thought it was going to be a lot of fun because, first of all, what great seats. I mean, you're right there in the front row. You see everything live as it happens. You get unlimited refills of vitamin water. It seemed like a terrific idea. But then reality set in and things changed. My schedule got crazy, pressure started building, Randy kept calling me dude. It was just very different than what I was originally expecting. I guess if I had to sum up my experience in one word, it would be funficult. It was really fun, but it was hard. To give you a little sense of what my schedule was like during that year, I can walk you through a typical day. Normally, I tape my talk show at 4 o'clock every afternoon. I have all day to prepare and rehearse, and then from 4 to 5, I tape the show straight through. A little secret about my show is that I tape it a day in advance of it airing on television. So when you're watching my show, let's say on a Wednesday, it's actually Tuesday for me. Your today is always my tomorrow, and your yesterday is my today. Your last night is my tonight, your tomorrow is my 2 days from now. But American Idol is always live. So I think you see what I'm saying. I never knew what day it was or where the hell I was. To accommodate my schedule during Idol, we would tape my show at 2:30 instead of 4. That way we ended at 3:30 and I could jump in my car and drive across town to the Idol studios. It was always very stressful to get there on time since it's a live show, but luckily I'm pretty good at maneuvering through traffic. You just have to drive on less crowded streets. Well, not streets, sidewalks. Once I got to Idol, I would change out of my daytime talk show host outfit, casual chic, change into my primetime outfit, judge's robe, and get primetime hair and makeup, powdered wig, sex kitten eyes, etc. Then I'd run on stage for the 5 o'clock show. Everyone there seemed to have a very, very busy schedule, and I assume that's why Simon never had time to button his shirt up all the way. As hectic as my schedule was, the bottom line is that I don't like judging people and I don't like hurting people's feelings. That was the hardest part of being on that show for me. It was very easy for me to sit at home in my pajamas and critique performances, but when I was sitting at that judge's table 10 feet away from kids who have put their heart and soul into the competition, and they're staring at me hoping I would say something nice, and Simon sitting next to me caressing my leg under the table, it was very difficult. I felt awful saying anything negative, so sometimes I would end up saying things like, "That was great," when I really wanted to say, "Uh-oh." And I know there's such a thing as constructive criticism, but to me that's still criticism. It's just criticism with a jaunty hat. You're still hurting people's feelings, and I don't like it. I don't do it on my talk show. I don't do it in real life. I just don't do it. One of the reasons I didn't like giving criticism was that a lot of the contestants felt like Idol was the end of the road. If they were eliminated, they thought it was all over, but that isn't the case. One of the good things about being there was that I got to tell them that there's a lot more waiting for them outside of Idol. In fact, I had each contestant on my talk show the next day where I introduced them to a whole other audience, and I loved being able to do that. It's the same with every career and life decision. You just have to keep driving down the road. It's going to bend and curve, and you're going to speed up and slow down, but the road keeps going. For me, I made a pit stop at Idol. It was exciting, and I'm grateful for the opportunity, but then I decided it was best for me to move on. So I got back in my hovercraft, and I kept going down the road. And now I have my own record label, and I can discover and nurture new talent, and that feels great. And I'm still a huge fan of Idol. I watch it every single week. It's a great panel. Randy's been there from the beginning. He's experienced and honest. There's the glamorous diva with the pretty hair and the jewelry and the gorgeous makeup. And then there's Jennifer Lopez. She doesn't look so bad herself. I love watching, and I'm happier now that I get to watch at home on my sofa with Portia, and the only thing I have to judge is Portia's cooking. That's a joke. It's always delicious. Chapter 15. Inside my head. I'm on vacation right now, or as some people say, I'm on holiday, or as other people say, I'm paying a lot of money to sit on a beautiful beach and do nothing but eat, sleep, and eat. I've had a pretty busy couple of years, and this is the first time in a long time that I can take a break and just sit down, relax, and think about nothing. I'm just going to let my mind wander. I'm going to sit here and stare at the water, and even though it sounds irresponsible, I'm going to let my mind just go off on its own, just walk away, just wherever it wants to go, totally unsupervised. Just, here we go. Oh, see, now this feels nice. The ocean breeze is like Mother Nature softly blowing in my face. I usually don't like it when people blow right in my face, especially if they've just smoked a cigarette or had some coffee or a bite of Gouda, but this is nice. Oh, the ocean is beautiful. It's crystal blue, almost turquoise, aquamarine. Aqua. Aqua. It's one letter away from agua, which is Spanish for water. I wonder if that's on purpose. The agua is aqua. That's fun to say. Oh, I just said that out loud. The gentleman next to me just glared at me. I'm sorry, sir. I'm sorry that I'm so smart and I know that agua means water in Spanish. I also know how to say hello in Spanish. I can't remember it right now, but I'll think of it in a minute. So take that, sir. Ah, someone walking by in flip-flops. That looks uncomfortable. She's kicking up sand everywhere. She's going to find sand in places she didn't even know she had later. I bet it'll end up in her bed. I can just picture her turning over in the middle of the night after having a dream about Goldie Hawn chasing her down a spiral staircase in Guadalajara, and she'll get a face full of sand. Maybe she wants that. Sand can be exfoliating. I wonder who invented the flip-flop. Must have been someone who loves joint pain or hates getting places quickly. I hope that lady's not in a hurry, because she is not going anywhere fast. She might as well be wearing high heels. I don't know if I've ever actually seen anyone wearing high heels in a bathing suit on the beach. I've seen it on The Price is Right, that is for sure. Plinko is such a fun game. We inflict a lot of pain on ourselves, don't we? We walk in high heels and wear flip-flops. Just a thin piece of rubber with a plastic strap jammed between our toes. That's acceptable to us as footwear. We get bikini waxes, we pinch ourselves when things are going well. Why can't we just be hairy and wear sensible shoes and kiss ourselves all over when we're happy? I guess that's what a hippie is. I should move up north. I should become a hippie. Shoot, I can't. I have a dentist appointment next week. Oh, I am just going to close my eyes for a second. That sandbar incident was embarrassing. I wish I had asked more questions before I swam out there. It's called a sandbar. Surely I am not the first person to swim out there and expect a dolphin to make me a Mai Tai. They should just call it a lump of sand in the middle of the ocean instead of a sandbar. Stupid ocean. Whatever. I'm over it. I mean, I wouldn't point and laugh at someone if I sent them to a koi pond and they expected the pond to be shy. It sounds like koi pond. Whatever. I'm over it for real this time. Oh, I feel something on my arm. I hope it's not a squirrel. No. Oh, it's an ant. That's sweet. Hi, ant. I wonder why we call people antsy. Ants don't seem to be antsy. If anything, the way they build their tiny little ant huts, they seem very patient and calm. Why is having ants in your pants an expression? I'm sure someone had something else in his or her pants that was just as bothersome before anyone had ants in their pants. Why isn't it flies in your pants, or breadcrumbs in your pants, or porcupines in your pants? That would really be annoying. Poor ants. They really get the what for just because the name rhymes with pants. I should call my aunt. Boats are pretty. That boat is stopping near that sandbar, probably expecting to get some drinks. Idiots! They don't serve drinks there. It's just a strip of sand. You know what's a funny word? Palm frond. Frond is a funny word. I wish I had a friend named Frond. This is my friend, Frond. This is Frond, my friend. Uh-oh, I said that out loud, too. Now that man is really looking at me. He thinks I'm crazy. The gall of that man to think I'm crazy for talking out loud. I'm not crazy. I'm sure he's had the same kind of thoughts. I bet he wishes he had a friend named Frond. I'm just going to smile at him. Nope, shouldn't have done that. I think I have some brownies stuck on my front tooth. Now he thinks I'm really crazy for talking out loud and missing a front tooth. It's not like talking out loud and missing a tooth makes you crazy. There are a lot of things that make you crazy. Like pushing around a shopping cart all day. I don't want to label people, but usually someone who is not completely balanced has a shopping cart. Actually, that's a smart idea. I should get a shopping cart. What a great invention that is. I don't carry a purse. I usually put everything I need in my pockets. But it might be fun to push a shopping cart around. I'd put so much stuff in there. People would be like, did you just come from the grocery store? And I'd be like, no, you fool. This is my purse on wheels. That's what I'd call it, a purse on wheels, or POW. No, I would not. I guess I don't want to call it that. I don't want people thinking I'm pushing around a prisoner of war. But maybe if I'd add an exclamation mark like, pow! People would pronounce it like wow, but pow. I don't know. I guess it'd be hard to get it in my car anyway, my purse on wheels. Oh, well. Hola! That's how you say hello in Spanish. I knew it would come to me. See, I am not crazy, sir. Okay, that just came out loud. That was just a... okay. Chapter 16. Family. We are family. I got all my sisters with me. We are family. Get up, everybody, and sing. Sister Sledge. A few years ago, I received a letter from a genealogist at the New England Historic Genealogical Society. At first, I thought it was a letter from my lady doctor, but then someone told me genealogy means family. They wanted to know if I was interested in learning about my lineage. Up until that point in my life, I hadn't really thought about my family history. All I knew for sure was that I was born in Metairie, Louisiana, and I came out of my mama's belly button. But as soon as I received the letter, I started thinking about my past and my ancestors. Who am I? Where am I from? Why do I love hummus so much? So I asked the genealogist to do some research for me, and they found out some very interesting facts. They told me I'm related to a whole bunch of celebrities, and not just in the Kevin Bacon sort of way. I mean, actually related to. First of all, I found out I'm married to Portia de Rossi, which is amazing. She's beautiful and one of the nicest people I've ever met. Also, I found out that I'm 10th cousins, once removed from the Academy Award-winning actress Halle Berry. That's a pretty obvious one. Look at us. We're like twins. People are probably always passing her on the street yelling, Ellen, dance! I am also a distant cousin of Richard Gere, so now there are two reasons we can't date. I am 8th cousins, 9 times removed from George Washington, which explains why I cannot tell a lie and I love to wear powdered wigs. And most important of all, I'm royalty. I am 15th cousins with the future Queen of England, Kate Middleton, which makes it a lot less weird that I have everyone who works for me call me Your Royal Highness. Actually, I found out that my ancestors date all the way back to 15th century England. That's like when Big Ben was just a tiny little baby Ben. I have relatives with names like Jean Laurent DeGeneres and Jean Baptiste DeGeneres, which are really fun to say. And I'm a descendant of William Brewster, who came over in the Mayflower. I assume that's why I'm so attracted to a shoe with a buckle. It's exciting to find out what your roots are. Knowing where we came from explains so much about who we are. Plus, it gives us so many more people to borrow money from. What's interesting when you really think about where we all come from and how different our past might be is that if you were to peer into the window of any house on any street during a big family holiday celebration, you would most likely see many of the same scenes. You would also risk getting arrested for trespassing, but still you would see that all of our families are very much the same. No matter where we come from or to whom we're related or how our past have impacted our current lives, every family gathering tends to go the same way. First, you hope that your favorite aunt invites you to her house for the holidays because she has the finished basement with a nice pool table. She's not going to. Instead, everyone is going to go to your uncle's who has 4 pit bulls and an indoor skate ramp made out of recycled beer bottles. As soon as you get there, you get stuck talking to your brother-in-law's brother. You have nothing to talk about, so you start with, "Wow, I haven't seen you since you were on Cops." Immediately, your mom grabs you and says, "You weren't supposed to mention Cops. Why did you mention Cops?" Then you apologize for mentioning Cops. Somehow, in the apology, you make a joke like, "Well, at least you weren't on To Catch a Predator, right?" Another apology is made. Then Cousin Pam shows up with her famous corn casserole that is famous for all the wrong reasons. You know, the first thing that she's going to want to do is play the guitar and sing about peace, so you decide to go outside for some fresh air, even though it's 4 degrees and snowing, and you forgot to pack a coat. 2 seconds later, 9 kids follow you outside to pelt you with snowballs, and when you don't throw any back at them, they start calling you names and make you feel bad that your skin turns red in the cold. It's not your fault. You've always had sensitive skin, and there's nothing wrong with being sensitive. You tell the kids that, but it doesn't go well at all, so you head back inside and ask if there's anything you can do to help because you're polite and because your mom is giving you that "you better ask if you can help, I didn't raise you to just stand there and do nothing" look. You hope the answer will be no, but your aunt says, "Sure, I haven't made the sweet potato pie yet, you can do that." Then you panic, because you don't know the difference between a sweet potato and a yam, and both are on the counter, and if you start making a yam pie, you'll never hear the end of it. So you start making a yam pie. Luckily, the people are distracted by a dozen grown men screaming in the living room because little Timmy unplugged the TV just as a football team was scoring a touchdown. Timmy starts to cry. The dogs start to bark. Everyone finally sits down to eat. The wine will start flowing, and so will the secrets. Guess what? Mom's pregnant. Guess what else? So is Dad. He can do that now. You scarf down your meal and head home wondering if everyone's family is that crazy. The answer is a resounding yes. But we should be grateful for them, because without our family, the ancestors we descend from, the cousins we see once a year, the loves of our lives we see every day, life is pretty boring. You don't have to believe me, but you should. I'm royalty. Chapter 17. What would Jesus do? I don't know if you've read a magazine lately or gone online or watched TV or visited a mall. I don't know what you do in your spare time, and frankly, it isn't any of my business. But if you have done any of those things, you've probably been asked to participate in an opinion poll. Opinion polls have become incredibly popular. People love them. I know because I read that in an opinion poll. Lately, it seems that every magazine has a poll. Every tabloid has a poll. Every internet site. Every bedroom in my house. That's a different kind of poll, but I'm just sharing it with you. And I have to say, I'm not sure that all these polls are totally necessary. A lot of them ask the same questions. Which couple is cuter? Do you like her dress? Do you like his shirt? Who wore it better? Are they too skinny, too fat, too pretty, too ugly, too tall, too short, too hairy, not hairy enough? Many of them ask questions that not only seem unnecessary, but to use a technical term, are also bonkers. I won't say the name of the magazine. It sounds like pen style. I stole from my dentist's office, but there was a poll in it that asked readers, how far would you take this season's hot shade of green? 39% of the people said all the way, 37% said halfway, and 24% said just a hint. Now, here's my first question. What? How far will you take this season's hot shade of green? What does that mean? What does that mean, take green all the way? Like to the prom? Are you going to settle down and have children with the color green? And look how close it is between all the way and halfway. There's only a 2% difference. I'm surprised we didn't hear about that on the evening news. I read another poll in a different magazine that I cannot and will not name, even if you beg me to. Sounds a lot like Clamor. It asked readers, hot pink dress. Is it a do or a don't? Now here's my question about this poll. Who cares? If you want to wear a pink dress, wear a pink dress. It doesn't matter what other people think. 100% of the people polled could say a pink dress is a do, and guess what? I still ain't wearing one. I've been in these magazines, and it's always an awkward thing to open up one and see yourself compared to a bunch of random people. It's like, who wore it better, Ellen or Heidi Klum? And obviously, when you put the two of us side by side, it's just not fair to Heidi. They go after everyone on those polls. I actually think if Jesus were alive today, there would be polls about him in Us Weekly. Who wore this flowy gown better, Jesus or J-Lo? Jesus' sandals, hot to trot, or heavens no? Do you think Jesus should cut his hair? 54% of the readers say yes, Jesus should cut his hair. And of course, that would be followed up by, should Jesus cut his hair into a mullet or a buzz cut? All these polls do is make everyone so judgmental, and I don't believe in judgment, unless it's judgment of judgment. I don't think someone has to wear something better or have a better hairstyle. That's why the word different exists in our language. I don't know why the word mustache exists, though. Can't we just call it lip hair? We all spend so much time comparing ourselves to each other. Everyone is running around trying to keep up with the Joneses. Who are the Joneses anyway? Why are we trying to keep up with them? I'm sure they're not perfect. We don't need to keep up with them. It's hard enough keeping up with the Kardashians. And people compare everything. It's not just clothing. It's who has a bigger house, who drives a faster car, who has a better job. People compare their bodies to other people. And not only that, they compare what's on their bodies. Have you ever gotten a bruise or a scratch or a paper cut and shown someone else what happened? People immediately start stripping off their clothing to compare injuries. I once went into work and showed some producers a little bruise I got. The next thing I knew, it was like girls gone wild in my office. People were lifting up their shirts, rolling up their pants, socks were coming off. You think that's bad? I walked into a tree yesterday. I banged my hip on a car door. I sat on a fork. I don't need to see it. People were showing me scars and beauty marks that were not at all beautiful. I'm going to tell you all right now, even if your beauty mark is in the shape of a prize ribbon, I don't need to see it. Same goes with stretch marks, ladies. When you say, look what my kids did to me, I expect to see gum in your hair, not your whole midsection. And no, I will not rub cocoa butter on it. Anyway, all I'm saying is I don't see the sense in comparing ourselves to other people all the time. It's not about being better than anyone else or having nicer things or bigger fork marks on your behind. I personally like being unique. I like being my own person with my own style and my own opinions and my own toothbrush. I think it's so much better to stand out in some way and set yourself apart from the masses. It would be so boring to look out into the world and see hundreds of people who look and think exactly like me. If I wanted that, I could just sit in front of a mirror and admire my own reflection all day. That's already how I spend my mornings. I don't need to spend all of my time doing that. And who's to say what's better or worse anyway? Who's to even say what's normal or average? We're all different people and we're all allowed to be different from one another. If someone ever says you're weird, say thank you and then curtsy. No, don't curtsy. That might be too weird. Bow and tip your imaginary hat. That'll show them. Chapter 18. Random things that might help you but probably won't. Never make your bed with a monkey in it. Leaning forward in your chair when someone is trying to squeeze behind you isn't enough. You also have to move your chair. There's no attractive way to get a cherry pit out of your mouth. When making a right turn onto a busy street, always check the crosswalk for children's imaginary friends. Everyone looks better in fuchsia. If you have portraits of yourself up all over your house, people are going to think you're conceited. Replace them with portraits of me. When moving heavy objects, I know they say to lift with your knees. I've always found it easier to lift with my arms. Restrooms are not for resting. When your eye twitches, it means your body wants you to wink rapidly at whoever is sitting across from you. If you like winning, never play hide-and-seek with a chipmunk. Answering every question with, "You got it, girlfriend," can apparently be irritating to others. Kerfuffle is an actual word. At a four-way stop sign, the person with the prettiest eyes has the right of way. Chapter 19. Common courtesy. I am never late. In fact, I'm usually early. This is partly because I believe in respecting other people's time and partly because I forgot to turn my watch back after I went to Europe one summer. In a recent highly scientific study I conducted among friends, family, and cable repairmen, I discovered one thing to be true. Most people are always late. I don't know when it became socially acceptable to be late. I imagine it started with the person who coined the phrase fashionably late. What a terrible expression that is. I don't know who came up with it, but it was obviously someone smart enough to trick people into thinking that something is stylish when it is definitely not stylish. I'm assuming it was the same person who invented culottes. I remember one time Portia and I invited a couple over to dinner, and they showed up 2 hours late. You heard me, 2 hours. 120 minutes. 7,200 seconds late. We told them to come at 7 and they got there at 9. By the time they showed up, we ran out of firewood for the fireplace. Our candles had melted down completely, and I was capital D-runk, drunk. To be fair, I was drunk at 4:30, but that is not the point I'm making. If someone invites me to a dinner party and they say to be there at 7, I'll show up at noon. And if they're not ready for me, I'll use that time to go through their medicine cabinets. I would never be late because it throws off the whole plan for the evening. Everyone schedules dinner parties the same way. You call it for 7, you expect people to trickle in between 7 and 7:15. There's about 18 to 20 minutes of small talk, some appetizers, and by 7:45 it's time to eat. You eat for about an hour. drink a magnum or two of Chablis, have a heated discussion about politics and/or the quality of the Look Who's Talking sequel as compared to the original, and by 9 o'clock you're yawning so people know it's time to find their coats. When people don't show up until 9, everything gets pushed back far too late. By the time we were ready for dessert, I was ready for bed, literally. I had put on my night guard and I had taken all my clothes off. I understand that sometimes people are going to be late. I can deal with someone being 10 minutes late or 15 minutes late, but once you hit an hour, you better have a really good excuse, like you gave birth to a baby in your car. And if you're going to be more than an hour late, you better show up with a litter. What I've realized is that people don't care about common courtesy anymore. How many times have you held a door open for someone who walks right through it without saying thank you? How many times have you let someone into your lane of traffic without receiving the courtesy wave? I mean, who among us hasn't picked up a drifter only to be disappointed after they steal all the money out of your wallet when you thought they were looking for gum? We've all been there. And not only are people rude, they have no boundaries anymore. I was in a public ladies' room recently because the portalette that's usually part of my motorcade was in for repairs, and the person in the stall next to me was talking on her cell phone. In the stall. In public. Not a care in the world. On the one hand, I was happy for her because I found out her son made the honor roll and her husband got a promotion at work. On the other hand, I didn't need to know that her rash turned out to be nothing more than bicycle chafing. When I was growing up, you couldn't take your phone anywhere because it was tethered to the wall in the kitchen. If you were on the phone, you were only on the phone because there was nothing else you could do except maybe flip through an old cookbook or rifle through a junk drawer full of pennies. You couldn't even bend down to tie your shoe or you'd get choked by 6 feet of phone cord. Now that we can take our phones practically anywhere, everyone is completely distracted when they're supposed to be having a personal conversation. Have you ever been talking to someone and you can tell they're not paying attention to what you're saying at all? They pretend they are because every few seconds they say, oh, really? That's so neat. And you're like, how is it neat that I have the flu? It's crazy to me that people don't realize we can hear what's going on in the background of wherever they are. I know you're watching television because I can hear Anderson Cooper and I know he's not your roommate. I know you're in the grocery store because I can hear that grapes are on sale. I know you're at the gym because someone is telling you to feel the burn. At least I hope you're at the gym. Everyone tries to multitask now and do 12 different things at once. I once saw a woman talking on the phone, putting on makeup, reading a newspaper, texting, twittering, all at the same time. I went right over to her and I said, hey, you need to focus right now. You are my therapist. I guess what I'm saying is that politeness seems to be lacking in our society nowadays. In the 1950s, people were much more polite. They used to say, good day, ma'am. Good day, sir. Good day, mate. I might be thinking of the Australian outback, but still, people were polite. Wally and the Beeve were never late for dinner. After Lassie rescued Timmy from the well, Timmy sent Lassie a handwritten thank you note and a gift certificate to Denny's. And one of the biggest songs of the decade was called Don't Be Cruel. Another one was Bebopalooa. I don't know if that has anything to do with the politeness. I just thought you might want to know that. I'm not saying we should return to those times entirely. I mean, most ladies wore girdles, and I don't think we need to revisit that situation. I'm just saying we can all work on our manners. We can say please and thank you. We can be punctual. We can just be nicer to one another. It's something we have in our power to do. It reminds me of that Margaret Mead quote, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. That's either Margaret Mead or it was my horoscope in last month's issue of Yarn Today. My point is, be nice and be on time. Please. Thank you.